The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, Colin and Justin catch George Wasky after his show at the Baltimore Soundstage. They discuss important topics such as the writing process, epic rap battles, and road food. I'm Sean Holmes, and you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because you are boldly going nowhere.
I don't think they're anywhere near being loaded out.
So are you sure?
As long as I'm not the last one holding up the bus, we're good.
Okay.
So. All right. Well, we're ready to go. So, Justin, if you want to go ahead and start us.
Are you recording?
Yep.
All right. So, for Castwave Studios, I'm Justin Eisenstadt. Colin Kakamas is here with me. We are, well, I was about to say we're backstage, but we're not. We're just at the Baltimore Soundstage here in Baltimore. And we're here with someone that we're both incredibly excited to talk to. His name is George Wasky. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So, George, I know you've got to be exhausted. That show was kick-ass. Every time you come to Baltimore, it seems like you just tear the roof off the sucker in new ways.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. I'm physically tired, but I feel great. I mean, whenever the show goes well, I feel good. So.
Yeah, so I've interviewed a lot of musicians, and the question I always ask them, the very first question, is what is the fast food item you're craving the most after a show like that?
Cheese fries. Yeah, I'm a vegetarian, so my like Denny's options are pretty limited, and cheese fries has that starchiness and cheesiness. You know, you just can't go wrong.
Yeah, breakfast of champions.
Absolutely.
Now, because Colin, we were talking about, you'd mentioned In-N-Out Burger several times,
mm-hmm.
So that must have a particular place in your heart. What other chains have you frequented along your tour?
You know, I did a lot of traveling alone for my spoken word gigs, and you just learn, and especially as a vegetarian traveling, the one thing that you can eat on every menu. So like I have my Taco Bell meal, which is you get a side of rice, a side of cheesy beans, and cheese nachos with jalapenos. I put terrible things into my body, by the way. I'm not a healthy vegetarian. So Taco Bell, T-Bell can be good. I'll hit up Quiznos when I'm on the road. Seems like I'm endorsing a lot of corporate spots, but the sad truth of it is when you're so tired, you gravitate towards the things that you recognize.
The familiar, yeah.
Exactly.
Have you been to a Sonic?
I've been to Sonic, yeah. I mean, every one of these places, I just get starch and cheese. I just get, like, cheese tots at Sonic, yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
So we're both in a band as well, so, and I'm a writer, and those are two areas that I'm coming at trying to talk to you about just because you're a huge inspiration.
Thank you.
Your band is a huge inspiration, and I wanted to talk to us a little bit about some of your themes real quick.
Sure.
I'm not going to make this like an English class, but I just noticed like nostalgia and childhood are really big themes. Nothing Like the First Time and Cardboard Castles,
mm-hmm.
and particularly the song Cardboard Castles itself, because that video was gorgeous.
Thank you.
Where are you drawing that from? Like, it's amazing to be so nostalgic at still a relatively young age.
I think that that it's kind of summed up. There's this, I think it was a Russell Crowe speech that he gave when he was winning his first Oscar. I think it was after Gladiator, but don't quote me on it, that I was really inspired by, where he made a point that I found to be so moving, which was that he is the exact same person who had that moment of aspiration to be an actor, and that you think of yourself sometimes as your adult version is different than your child version or different than the elderly version, but it's really one person, it's one spirit who's experienced more things, and that moment that he decided he dreamed of being an actor, dreamed of not necessarily winning an Oscar but being recognized for his talents, was connected through time and space with the moment that it actually was realized. And so I feel that same way on a smaller scale. You know, the moment that I dreamed of being a creator, that I was first inspired to do something. I think first experiences are so powerful because you haven't become jaded yet. You're still discovering things. And I am all constantly trying to seek out those experiences because that's what living is about. And to see the seed of a dream planted and then to see it realized, to me, to connect those two things in time is incredibly powerful. And Cardboard Castles felt like, you know, me kind of saying, like, I'm finally seeing some of these things come true, and it's incredibly gratifying to me.
Yeah. And it's a really great album,
thank
honestly.
You.
What I wanted to ask is, how do you think you've changed, though, as you've made these albums and the band changes or the music changes? How do you think you personally change as you're putting your heart and soul into these projects?
I think I keep trying to look for new things to say. Obviously, that's a tough kind of thing to do when everything's been said before a million times, but I'm always trying to put out a project that doesn't feel exactly like the last one. I think musically I've gotten better. When I set out on my last tour 9 months ago, I was terrified of singing basic melodies, and I will never be a diva, like, great singer, but I feel like I can hit pitches now, at least. I feel like my musicality has improved, and I'm trying to get it up to the point. I mean, first and foremost, I'm a lyricist. I'll always be a lyricist. Yeah. I'll consider myself a poet before a singer or a musician or anything like that. I take pride in writing lyrics, and I'm just trying to get the other elements of my musicality up to a point where I feel not ashamed of them, like, and where people who are casual music listeners can pop in my CD and still enjoy it, not just word nerds
who
are listening for the deeper meanings.
Right, and I mean, your lyrics are probably what has attracted me to your music. I mean, you're probably my favorite rap. No, not probably, you are.
Thank you.
My favorite rapper. For the same reason, the Decemberists are my favorite rock band, just because they're so literate. Their lyrics, Colin Malloy's lyrics, are just fantastic. I don't know if you're a fan of the Decemberists.
Yeah, no, they're great. Thank you. Great to be compared to them.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm imagining you a collaboration and you doing raps
perhaps.
About pirates and sea shanties and
that'd be awesome.
Infanticide.
Yeah, maybe they might be Giants collaboration up next.
That would be awesome. And we saw
them
here in Baltimore last year as well.
Very cool.
And they're just awesome guys. I mean, actually, that's a good question. What would your dream show be if you could share a bill with anyone? Preferably still alive, otherwise we're going into true fantasy, but...
I don't know. Let's see. I mean, one of my biggest inspirations is Outkast. That would be an obvious choice in the hip-hop world.
Yeah.
I would love to... Maybe Bob Dylan? I don't know. That'd be pretty crazy. Paul McCartney? I don't know. Bring back Stevie Wonder. Those people would be amazing to...
Are you a fan of Aesop Rock at all?
Yeah, Aesop Rock is great. I listened to all that kind of, I hate to use the word backpacker, but like that was the world of hip-hop that I grew up on after. So there was one wave, my first wave of hip-hop listening was probably like 8th or 9th grade, where I was listening to everything on the radio. Listened to Ja Rule, and my first concert was a Ludacris concert. And then there was a second wave of more literate, meaningful lyrics hip-hop that I started listening to after that, which included Aesop Rock and all those Def Jux guys.
Yeah, LP.
And I listened to Talib Kweli, Mos Def, all the people on that defunct record label, Rockus, Black Star, Quantum was a big inspiration of mine. So the groups Blackalicious, Latif the True Speaker. That was kind of my second renaissance of listening to hip-hop.
All right, so I want to pass the mic over to Colin real quick before I hog it, but just my last question before I pass it over to him. As a writer, what do you think is the most important thing you can do to be true to your writing, to write what you feel, to write what you know, and to get over doubt? Because that's the biggest problem, I think, for most writers is doubt.
Well, I think the most important thing is to just constantly be kicking your own ass, to be grateful for what you have and to be enjoying the process. You never gonna be, if you're dreaming to get to a certain place in your career or a certain level of success, you'll never be satisfied, because you're gonna be, as soon as you sell a million records and you have a platinum album, there's gonna be pressure on you to do another one. There's gonna be people saying, oh, what's your next project? How are you gonna top the last one? And so there's this, I talk about it on the song Hey Asshole, this idea of this endless ladder that has rung after rung after rung. And even when you're up near the moon, you're still looking up and wondering where you're gonna go. And that applies to every single walk of life. That will never make you happy. The only way to be happy is to enjoy what you're actually doing. And if you don't like writing, you shouldn't necessarily be a writer. I'm not saying you shouldn't, because maybe you derive your joy from some other part of the process, or have written, or having people enjoy your work. But
yeah, I mean, you
need to find joy somewhere.
It's a lonely profession. If you're a true writer, like, there's something that keeps drawing you back to it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, I love sitting down and writing. I crack myself up with lines and stuff. I think if you don't like your own work, you don't find any joy in what you're doing, then it's going to be a tough slog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let me pass the mic over to Colin because I know he's psyched to talk to you as well.
Here, it's blocking.
Oh, thank you. I'm only going to ask one or two questions because right now I'm having a moment because you're probably...
He gets a little
verklempt. Yeah. No worries.
Well, I mean, you are my favorite contemporary musician right now, so this is a big moment for me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I guess one of the biggest questions I've always had, if I was ever going to ask you something, how long would you honestly say that when the thought process on a song goes for you? I mean, does it take weeks, months, years?
It just totally depends. I mean, I have songs that like slow stew over the course of 6 months or a year. I might have an idea for a song and sit on it and have that song title in a blank document and then not get around to writing it for 8 months and then just be kind of culling punchlines and figuring out, like on my last album, Dedicated to Christina Lee, I had the idea for maybe like a year and a half before I finished the song because it was so intricate and like I wanted to figure out how to tell a story and still have repeated lines that I was proud of. But like Wounded Healer, for instance, I listened to that riff from Deer Tick and was really inspired by it and I wrote it in a day and a half. Mm-hmm. Like Tiny Glowing Screens Part 2, I realized that I really badly wanted spoken word on my album and I was in the studio. We were just locked there for 2 weeks and I just went into the other room and I was like, I want to write a spoken word piece that encapsulates the spirit of this album. And I just sat down and I just was feeling it and I wrote it in like 40 minutes and I went in and I recorded it. And the first take that we used was the one that's on the album. And that rarely happens, but you know, in general, I have a longer writing process. I believe in editing. I believe in staring at your computer desk until the right words come out. And so it could take me anywhere from 40 minutes to 6 months.
Okay. Second question. I'm a huge fan of the Epic Rap Battles of History, which actually, yeah, that was how I first found you, was when you were William Shakespeare.
Yeah, cool.
But I do have to ask this question. When you were the fourth Doctor on the Doctor Who versus Doc Brown episode, did you get to choose which version of the Doctor you were, or did they like, hey, you're the fourth Doctor, go put the scarf on?
This is going to very much disappoint Doctor Who fans out there. But I got to choose Shakespeare. I was very proud of playing Shakespeare. I don't follow Doctor Who. I actually had to do research into who my character was. And Nice Peter asked me to play that character, and I said, absolutely, I would love to be back. But I'm not a connoisseur of Doctor Who. Consider myself a recent fan, you know, delving into the research. So I've been told that I played a very beloved version of the Doctor, mm-hmm, specifically fans of the campy aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I chose to play Shakespeare, and I was really stoked on that because, like, one of the greatest writers of all time, they hadn't done it before. So, mm-hmm, yeah, I feel like I can never really live up to that gold standard of playing a character anymore. I might bow out of Epic Rap Battles just because I don't want to sully that I got to do that.
Okay. I guess my last question, and I know you're busy, so
you're good.
I guess my last question is, I mean, obviously, this is your first studio album since Invisible Ink, right?
Since Watsky, actually, in 2009. We did Invisible Ink in 2007, and then Watsky came out in 2009, which is a self-titled one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been 4 years.
Well, after Cardboard Castles, and obviously the success that it's been getting, I mean, hopefully it's a welcome surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm incredibly grateful and stoked and relieved, frankly. I feel great about it.
I guess the last question I have is, where do you see yourself going from this point? I mean, what's the next level to go to?
Honestly, I've kind of had my career, like my hope for my career, planned out up until this point, which was first it was support myself and my art. And that was achieved through playing college campuses over and over and over again for years. Then it was, how can I broaden my audience? And that happened through the Fast Rap video. After that happened, mm-hmm, the goal was to become a credible artist and not an internet phenom. You know, I had to kind of swim upstream against the whole virality aspect. And in the last 2 years have been about getting me to the point where I could release a real album and tour off it. And now I have no idea. I'm here, I'm grateful, and I'll figure it out in June when I get back from the road.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like you're the type who's just going to kick back and rest on your laurels. So
no, I think everyone has their vices, and for some people it's drinking, for some people it's drugs, for some people it's sex. For me, it's working. Like, I love feeling productive. It's the only way that I feel like I'm contributing to the world, and I'm sure I'll take a day off and then be right back at it.
Yeah, I understand. What was the most challenging thing about getting back into the studio after all that time?
Just wanting to feel like the work was living up to the standard that, you know, I thought about not wanting to slip backwards. I never want to recede in the quality that I feel like I'm putting out. So I felt pressure that it wasn't going to be good enough. And so I was not sure if I was ready and I had the material there. But, you know, I feel really proud of the project we came up with.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up. Last question. I want your opinion on a personal thing.
Okay.
It's a band name.
Mm-hmm.
What would your opinion of the band name Stephen and the Hawkings be?
I like it. I'm going to give you my honest opinion. I think it's a good name. I think that you can pigeonhole yourself if you choose a very nerdy title, which is not a problem. It depends what you want your audience to be.
Nerds.
You might be picking your audience before they pick you. That's one potential thing. But if that is the band, if Stephen and the Hawkings, or Stephen and the Hawkings,
yeah.
If that to you encapsulates the spirit of your group, then by all means, you should have that be your band name.
That is a good answer.
Yeah.
That is a good answer. And you, sir, are awesome for taking the time to do this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And for Castwave Studios, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Good night.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.
Cheesy beans. Cheese fries. Just can't go wrong. That starchiness and cheesiness. Cheese fries. That starchiness and cheesiness. Cheese fries. You got a side of rice, a side of cheese fries. Cheesy beans.